Good afternoon. We'd like to call the Customer Service and Operations Committee meeting to order. You have the agenda before you. Are there any concerns or comments about the agenda? Hearing none, the agenda is accepted without objection. Next, the approval of the minutes of July 11th, 2013. Is there a motion for?
Motion.
Motion by Mr. Bulger. Is there a second? Second by Mr. Nichols. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
And opposed? Before us today, we have three informational items on our list, and one will we begin learning more about the Silver Line marketing plan. And our staff has demonstrated how we're going to be raising more awareness about the Silver Line, informing our customers about the new service that's coming, and ultimately encouraging them to try it out. And basically, we are exposing everybody to the fact that the Silver Line is actually coming online within the next several months. The second item on the agenda is the discussion of the Title VI and the new federal requirements that we're required to approve regarding service standards, policies, and definitions. And this is a beginning stage of addressing that issue. And finally, we'll be getting a look at the progress report on how well we've been performing using the new metrics in our vital signs. And before I turn it over to Mr. Bowser, I'd like to inform you how the communications plan is working on the Silver Line. Fairfax County has joined the discussion and a planning process. And as we talk through this, there may be others that we might want to think about this. But the important part is that it's a collaborative piece. And as folks are going out, Fairfax, WMATA, others, we'll all be talking about the Silver Line. And I think it is preparing us for the new service and the benefits that we're going to provide for everybody. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Ms. Bowser. Bowersock. Excuse me.
Thank you.
She is Ms. Bowser over here.
I answered anything.
Thank you.
So thank you. Thank you, Ms. Hutchins. I'm really pleased today to share with the committee the marketing plan that we have for the Silver Line and to engage with the committee in discussion about how we educate our current and future riders about the coming of this terrific service. Before I get into what our customers know and don't know about the service, I just want to say that the Silver Line is not like other major rail projects in the sense that, you know, for those of us who are close to it, we spend years developing the funding for it, planning for it, developing the environmental impact studies for it, giving community input into it, and then finally watching the construction. And by the end of that time, we assume that everyone must know that this new service is coming. This is not unique to Washington. The same thing happens in other regions around the country. And then often it's surprising to find that maybe not all of the potential customers are as close to it or as tuned into it or as aware as sometimes we are. And that was certainly the case when I was marketing the River Line in New Jersey, and those between Trenton and Camden knew it was coming, but otherwise in the state there was not a high level of awareness. And it was the same with the Downeaster service at Amtrak coming from Portland, Maine to Boston, Massachusetts. There wasn't an even level of awareness. So when you think about a region of this magnitude with as much going on as we have here, it's important to note that we can't assume that everyone knows as much about the service as we do. And so when we started this marketing plan, we start with where all marketing plans must begin, and that's to understand what the customers know and what they don't. And we learned that the awareness level was not quite as high as maybe we thought it would be, and about 45 to 55% of our current riders are familiar with the fact that the service is coming. They may not have a lot of detail about it, but they've heard about it. They know generally what it is. We need to get to a higher number, a greater level of awareness when the service launches so that we can persuade people to try the service and to understand its advantages and what it can do for them and that they can take advantage of the opportunities that it creates. So we talk to customers through surveys and through focus groups this year. And we talked to them about the Silver Line and what they would do in terms of the purposes they would have for the service. Commuting to work, obviously, is a very important feature of the service. And for folks who may be coming from other places in Virginia, from the district, and from Maryland, coming out to Tyson's, now the second largest employment center in the region, very, very important. And in that reverse commuting direction in the morning, we're going to see a lot of travel going in that way. Also, obviously, for people who will live along the five new stations on the Silver Line, opportunities to come by rail now downtown to Maryland and to other locations in Virginia for work. And so that's a huge advantage. For the first time, they'll be able to use rail transit to do that. But there are also great leisure, entertainment, and opportunities for folks. And so if you're a family and you live in Reston today, if you wanted to go to the zoo and see the new panda family, you might pile into the minivan. But once the Silver Line opens, you will, in fact, have a rail option to come downtown to the zoo and not have to worry about parking. You also might have for the first time a convenient rail option to see the Nationals, to go to the Redskins game. And in fact, the Silver Line becomes a rail gateway to you for the world, because you can go to Union Station and take a train all across America. You can go to National Airport and get virtually anywhere. And eventually, you'll be able to use the Dulles Airport connection at the end of Phase 2. So we know that this is going to be a huge opportunity for our customers and will change the way they consider travel. We talked to our customers about messages and what might persuade them once they are familiar with the line and to try it. Obviously, the pinnacle of the pyramid here, number one reason that folks thought that they would try the line were work commutation purposes, and then the most persuasive argument was, it can get me out of the traffic. It's no secret that the region has the worst traffic congestion in America, and for folks that are sitting in gridlock on 66, for example, the option of a train was very, very attractive in terms of overall travel time as compared to the traffic that they sit in each day. Convenience was number two. And convenience on rail travel, some of us who do it every day take it for granted. Unlike being behind the wheel of a car, you can read, you can sleep, you can do work, you can catch up on list making. You have a number of opportunities to use that time better than you might behind the wheel. And then also affordability. There is, for some people, when you consider the cost of gas, mileage, wear and tear in your car, and parking fees these days, a very competitive price point here when you consider the average rail price, rail fare, compared to what you put into a car. And so those messages are going to be important to communicate. We have in our plan a strategy that really has three phases, and this is not unlike what we did when we rolled out Rush Plus, which was very effective. We have the awareness building phase of our campaign, which will precede the operational readiness date, which means it starts now. It's already started. Today it takes front and center stage, and the rollout will continue. When we get to the operational readiness date, we'll be in the learning phase. So we'll hopefully have increased awareness, and we'll be trying to deliver even more specific information about the service, and I'll talk about that in a minute. And then in the window, when we're in testing, after operational readiness and just getting ready for the revenue launch, at the time when the board is setting the date for the revenue service to start, we'll be in the now arriving phase. So if we talk about that in terms of what the customer will see in the first phase and the tactics, already there have been stakeholder coordination meetings, and I really want to thank you, Ms. Hudgens, because it was your suggestion originally that we do this, and it has proved invaluable for us at WMATA. We have a biweekly conference call that we do with Fairfax County DOT, Fairfax County Police, the Connector Bus Service, and EMWA, and others who participate in that, and it's been very, very helpful to try to coordinate the outreach efforts that we're all making and the information that we're delivering to customers to make sure everything is consistent and accurate. And now we're going to expand that group. We'll be asking the JCC for input and others so that we can include the district and Maryland in that coordinating call. It's been very helpful. One of the things that those stakeholders have done is they've been working since June to help us with the design of the new website, silverlinemetro.com. We decided it was important, and the stakeholders agreed, to have something that wasn't just a page on the WMATA.com site, that we really needed to lift this up and hold it out and spend more time on a home page that would be educational than what limited real estate we have available on the WMATA homepage. So silverlinemetro.com will become the clearinghouse of information for our customers who want to learn about the Silver Line. And, of course, the new map, which we unveiled, and I'll talk about that when we get to the end. So if you look at the silverlinemetro.com's homepage, which is live today, you will see that it takes you through, and I'm sorry, I don't have an animated version for you here. This is just a static shot of the homepage. But when you see this live, it goes through different rotations. And you can actually see the five stations, and this is really focused today on where are these stations? Because that's the first question our customers have in focus groups. Okay, it's Virginia, but where? And tell me where it is on a map, and what's out there that I need to get to if I'm not familiar with the area. So you can click on Explore, and you can click on Neighborhood Connections. And today what you will see when you click there is the Google Map pops up. And it will show you shopping, and it doesn't just show you Tyson's Corner Galleria. It shows you the Kmart. But anything that's within sort of a radius of the station is already popping up on Google Maps. The message that I want to make sure I get out today is that we do not believe this is a comprehensive list of all the great destinations, retail, shopping, venues that are out there. We want to encourage businesses to work with us to come onto the website, to list their locations so the customers know they're there. And, in fact, I have a meeting with the Tyson's Partnership and some others coming up to do just that outreach and get them involved in the website to make sure that we have as much participation as possible. I also want to just thank and recognize Joe Green and Brian Anderson from my team, who did an extraordinary job on getting the stakeholder input and getting this website going. And today, if anyone is interested in adding information to the website, all they need to do is email us at externalrelations@wmata.com, and that's a great way to contact us. Yes, Mr. Nichols.
Just a quick question. Does the information show the bus feeder lines that will go to each station and where they will emanate from and that kind of information?
Right. So today, if you go and look under bus, it not only has Metro bus links and information, it also has Connector, and it links you with their logo to the Connector site, which talks about their future service to the Silver Line stations. And DR, I always get the acronym wrong, DRTC. Thank you. Delaware Rappahannock.
Oh, PRTC.
Thank you.
That's the bus service.
Which is also there and is linked. And we welcome others who want to participate. So now let's talk about ridership a little bit and where folks will be coming from and to. It's important to be clear always with ridership projections that this is not meant to be a number that is reflected on opening day. You build to these numbers, and the forecasters get these numbers looking at job growth and travel trends that change as the service comes online. But as you can see on a station-by-station basis here, we have the largest number that are anticipated coming from Wheelie Avenue, Reston Station East, and Tyson's Corner, followed by Spring Hill, McLean, and Greensboro. And that principally reflects employment centers and commuting trips. It's a great time to look and see how these stations have been progressing as Emma and the team have been building out the line. We have some pictures that are as recent as July. And here you can see the McLean station, where they even have landscaping in. The Tyson's Corner station, where they've completed the barrel canopy. This goes across route, I want to say 123, where Shiva, I'm looking for Shiva, route 123. Mm-hmm. The Greensboro station, where they're finishing the mezzanines, and here you can begin to see the station manager kiosk taking shape. And the Spring Hill station. And last but not least, Wheelie Reston East. And this is a shot of the platform. And as you can see, the new cement-based tiles are being used in these platforms. And as somebody who's had the prior platform at Shady Grove that I commute from every day, and now the new platform surfaces, these are terrific. And I think our customers along the Silver Line will appreciate their much less slippery in the winter months. In the rail service plan, it bears repeating for our customers who are going to be learning about the new service. The Silver Line will operate in the peak periods at about the same headway frequency as most of other lines, every 6 minutes. I also want to point out that the off-peak frequencies are relatively similar to the other lines in the system, about every 12 minutes. And along the blue line, bears repeating also, the original Silver Line plan called for frequencies only every 14 minutes. Thanks to our general manager and our deputy general manager of operations fine-tuning that, they were able to find a way to make those frequencies a little bit more aggressive, and so that service will operate every 12 minutes. It's a little bit better and within the construct of what you see elsewhere on the system. And when we reach operational readiness, you'll begin to see advertising throughout the system. Again, it will be very aggressive. We're going to blanket the system. We know from our customers that on the system is where they learn about Metro. So it's the ads in the stations, it's the kiosk screens, it's announcements, it's the collateral material that they collect along the way. But we'll also do general marketing, general market advertising. We'll have a commemorative Smart Trip card. We know that that's a keepsake that people like. It's an opportunity for businesses to partner with us, for us to have a sponsor. And Smart Benefits. Our Smart Benefits program is an incredibly, incredibly important part of this marketing plan, both in terms of government subsidy and in terms of the pre-tax programs that are out there for employers to offer employees. This commuter tax benefit is very, very important, and it makes the service much more affordable for folks and much more convenient because their employer handles either directly or through a private administrator the program for them. So it's very user-friendly for employees. And so we have started already. We're out there. We registered some new employers this summer, Falls Church, Springfield, and Reston, to enroll employee programs to our Smart Benefits program, and we're going to continue to market that aggressively and as well as directly to employees through community outreach programs. We'll be at the Dulles Plain Pole this Saturday. I understand that's a big attraction for the community. Great. So do they actually pull planes there?
Matter of fact, they will not only be pulling planes, but they'll have kids who have a children's pole.
Okay.
It's going to be interesting.
We were told it was a place where we could intersect with a lot of people. So we'll have a table there with EMWA, and we'll be passing out information about the Silver Line. And also, there's a T-shirt on here just to show you that we have a trademark pending for the SV mark. That's that disc and the way of illustrating those lines is part of the new map. The SV is pretty cool. We're going to license that. My favorite quote from this morning's press coverage of the map was in the Express. I don't know if you read the Express, but it's the free newspaper handout on the system. And one of our customers' reaction to the new map was, "Oh shoot! Now I'm going to have to replace my shower curtain." I think that. People do relate to the system by merchandise sometimes, and that's okay. And we do get a portion of the proceeds from the sale of all those shower curtains, by the way, so it's not a bad thing that they all need to go out and buy new shower curtains.
We need to promote them.
We have other tactics. The general manager will be hosting online chats. This has been successful for us in the past. At lunchtime, he's learning this now. At lunchtime, he sits behind a computer and answers questions from our customers, and they can ask those from anywhere they are, from a mobile device or from a desktop, and it's a great way to get information out to our riders. The Tyson's Corner folks have been very welcoming and have offered to work with us and their retailers to host displays, and the timing is great because they do their greatest business around the holidays, so we'll be out there with information tables in the mall and offering customers discounts and that kind of thing. We're also going to launch an e-newsletter. So MWA Today has a listserv of 42,000 stakeholders that they send information to. Today they're sending them the SilverLineMetro.com website link, and we look forward to talking with them as well as others who sign up. As we get closer, we'll be giving them now arriving news that way. Also, there's been a lot of interest in how we're going to target folks in Northern Virginia versus downtown in Maryland. And I just want to share with the committee that one of the ways that we'll do that is through direct mail. It's really the best way marketers have of geo-targeting information because you can do it by zip code. So we can develop materials that speak to you based on living in this area versus based on living in this area, and we can provide you with tailored information based on where we know you live or work. And so we'll have a couple ways of direct mail as a way of really giving specific information to our customers. And then finally, lots of interest in the inaugural events and activities. We plan to have station familiarization opportunities through open houses. So before the first train even operates, we'll have open houses. We'll invite the communities in. We'll invite businesses in, learn the station, learn the navigation around the station, the pedestrian access, the traffic flow, kiss and ride, et cetera, learn how to operate fare machines and that kind of thing. Our HR department is also going to use it, and the police department are going to be using that as job recruitment opportunities as well as to provide safety information to the communities who will have live trains operating through them for the first time. And obviously, any inaugural service will have a host of dignitaries on the first train who have been working for years to bring the service to the communities. It's going to be very important not only to have our funders and stakeholders and business leaders and community leaders, but also to have representatives from our riders. And so we intend to have some contests so that folks can participate and win as any member of the public an opportunity to ride on that first train. And then finally, the map, which was referenced earlier today. I want to thank Barbara Richardson for her leadership and Jennifer Green for her extraordinary project management that made this map possible. It's taken us a couple of years to get here. And I think the thing that we're all the most proud of, and I want to thank today, is our customers, because thousands upon thousands of them took the time to give us input on every small facet and large facet of this map. Nothing was too small. Abbreviations, I mean, they have been through every level of detail. And I think that the success story of that is really not just that we listened to them, but that they helped us work with Lance Fineman to make sure we could update this map and keep it as the incredibly powerful navigational tool that it is, but preserve the original character of the map that's been so iconic for Metro. And so we're very, very grateful to our customers for giving their time. As a gift today, we have the first merchandise with a new map on it, and it's a little eyeglass wipe. You can use it for your glasses. You can also use it for your smartphones. It's a great cleaner for smartphones. It is a very inexpensive product, less than a dollar a unit, so even members of the media who may be here are offered the opportunity to have one, as well as the public. I don't think it violates anybody's policies on gifts because it's de minimis. We hope you'll use it. We hope you'll share it. We'll be passing these out to prospective riders as a way to have something in their pocket that lets them learn the system. And with that, I think I'm at my limit of time. And
thank you, Ms. Bowersock.
Look forward to the committee's discussion.
I'm going to start with Mr. Bulger. He had a question. And Mr. Dyke, Mr. Nichols, next.
Okay. I wanted to go back to the rail service plan document, if we could. It's before the T-shirt. A couple observations that with the Silver Line coming online, from the city's perspective, District of Columbia's perspective, we're going to see a great deal of increased service between Roslyn and Stadium Armory in the off-peak. There'll be about 4 minute off-peak frequencies. So to get through the city from Roslyn to the stadium, that's a major selling point. With that said, there'll be another positive, as I understand it, from where the Silver Line comes in at West Falls Church in the Roslyn, that's going to produce six-minute frequencies, which we're not maybe picking up on. And then the third thing is, on the off-peak, we're going to have silver, orange, and blue is going to be a 12-minute, as you mentioned, Lynn, which is better than 14. So there's I don't know if you want to try to capture the two good things and the 12-minute, which could have been 14. I don't know how you want to handle that, but in the off-peak. But the big one was getting through the city from Roslyn to Stadium with four-minute off-peak is a big deal.
I agree, and I think that that's a really important point, and trying to call out those kind of attractive features of the new service are going to be important. And one of the things we know from our customers is that they're very destination focused. In other words, I don't take Metro just to take Metro, I take it to someplace. So as we advertise the destination possibilities, there's an opportunity in those messages to say how frequent the service is and how much more reliable it will be because it's not subject to traffic conditions on those big days. So it's a great marketing point, and we'll make it.
Thanks.
Yeah. I was just wondering, as far as the outreach, and maybe you mentioned this while I was out of the room, but have you reached out to the various chambers in Northern Virginia, like Reston and Fairfax and Loudoun, because we could get them talking about the Silver Line at the various events that they're having all over the place?
We've started to. I will tell you quite candidly that they've been very welcoming, very receptive, have invited us to participate, and so we really look forward to working very closely with them.
Mr. Nicholson.
Thank you for the presentation. It's very good. Appreciate it. Two questions. One is with the slide that showed the number of folks coming in, the destination slide, can you pull that one back up, please, on the screen? Yep, that's it. Is that those are the folks coming into the various employment or economic centers, is that what that is?
So that's ons and offs. Ons and offs. So those are trips to the station each day. And it's driven mostly by commutation. So it's mostly work trips.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And do we draw the conclusion that those are those new trips, or would those be trips that are taken off of the road and onto the train? How granular is our projection in terms of how that data set is made up?
Right. So I'm looking for Jim Hughes to see, or Shiva, if they know the percentage. But as I recall, the lion's share of the first-year trips are really trips coming from what is today on bus or on other rail. So it may be Metro bus and maybe connector buses, but those lines that are being rerouted to deliver people to the stations and give them that connection are a big part of that ridership. And then the second thing is there are some people taking Orange Line today who will find it more convenient to take Silver. And so they're shifting from one train station to another. That's the majority of the first-year customers.
Okay.
But then there's some number, and I'm sorry, Mr. Nichols, I don't recall if it's 70-30 or 60-40, but it's in that range of new travel, people who we have to try to incentivize to come out of cars, basically, and onto the system.
Okay. And I know that there's been a lot of data that's been generated around this, so I'll go back and do some of my own reading, and then maybe I'm sure they'll stimulate more questions. But one of the things that I'm thinking through is these are the people that are coming there. The question is, where are they coming from? I think that would be illuminating information to what are they coming from, you know, Springfield? Are they coming from Largo? Are they coming from Bethesda? Just how does the flow of people go back and forth? I think it would be important information to be able to understand in terms of how the region works and how we think it will influence and assist the region in terms of its growth and development?
Sure, we can provide details, and I'll start. Maybe Ms. Hudgens wants to pick up. But there's flow and there's counterflow. It's really bidirectional in this instance,
right?
Because a lot of the people who will be boarding on the Silver Line are going to other locations in Virginia and downtown for jobs.
We can give you the origin and destination.
Good projections.
Yeah.
Good. But these would be existing, as, and not necessarily the projected, which is a whole different matter of new development. Okay.
Right.
The last question relates to the data set that retailers and those folks have. Is there a, some of that is proprietary, they don't want to let, you know, we're a lot of things, but do they share data, or do we take advantage of the demographic understanding that, that retailers, the Tyson's retailers, for example, have about who comes and goes and where they come from and what motivates them? Is that shared data, and how collaborative is that?
Yeah, they do share it at a high level.
Sure.
Not on a store-by-store basis, maybe, but at a high level, they have a lot of that data, and they're very happy to share it and work with us to partner to bring more folks in. Everybody is parking constrained these days, so it's really to their advantage to have folks travel by train, and it increases their potential customer base, so they're very happy to participate with us on that.
And the very last question, may I? One more. Do we, on the, and I'll go look at the site, that's it's, that when the site becomes operational, when the station becomes operational, will that then fold back into our regular website? I presume that it will, or at a point, and related to that, is there any, the links that are on the site, do they go toward other kinds of illuminative information about economic development and planned activity and things like that? Are there any links from our Silver Line Metro station to those kinds of things?
So the links that exist today are to the local bus connections, to some of the local destinations. So if you go and you click on the Reston station, and then you do the drop-down menu for restaurants, and the Google Maps pop up, and you can click on the restaurants that you want. The other kinds of links are to the DOT, to their planning site for roadway information around the stations, and to... let's see.
Connector.
The connector, sorry. So the connector and the local bus services. That's what's there today, but we want to grow it to have more connections. It also goes to MWAS site, and there it talks about Dulles Phase 2. That was the other thing I was thinking of, so that you can learn about the rest of the project. So some of that will come in time. To your other question about the site itself, I do anticipate that after some period of time, after we inaugurate the service, that we'll migrate this site back to WMATA.com.
What didn't dilute the value of the service for what it's an informational service to help get people working and ready to ride the line. And the only, what pops in my mind is there the opportunity to use this in an appropriate way to really exploit information about what transit will do and does for economic development. And a lot of the data set that we've driven and we've created through Region Forward and through Momentum that demonstrates the value of rail transit and bus transit toward quality of life and economic development, there would seem to be some natural opportunities to use the linkages here to really highlight what this will do for the region in terms of exploiting economic and quality of life development that will benefit the entire region.
That's a very good point, and I will talk to my colleague Sean Conan, and we'll develop some information that we can add to the site.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Downs.
I would encourage you to think about how you would make a visit to the Deputy Mayor for Economic Development of the district. The ridership projections are based hopefully on counterflow, access to a new job market for people in the core, the jobs that have been very difficult to access, particularly in Tyson's Corner, are now one seat rides, easy to understand and quick. Having a intake and marketing process inside the district government, the employment services folks, that can help channel people to think more about the economic opportunities that are created by this for district residents, benefits the entire region, benefits the use of the line. It's off, I mean, it's counterflow. It's
very much counterflow.
If you think about the Orange Line outstations, there's not a lot of job access there. But this is all jobs. And I don't think anybody has actually made that a visible target for the coming ridership of the Silver Line, and I think it needs to be specifically targeted. Maryland might want to do some of the same thing, but I think the district is anxious to do that, and I would encourage you to structure a presentation around that set of issues about what the employment is here already, what a trip looks like, what the changes in cost are, how this might be built into the Department of Employment Services job placement programs, I think would be a benefit to everybody. So,
thank you. I will follow up with them.
The other is that Ms. Hudgens and I have been talking for a long time about a board
visit.
Mr. Drew has the message.
True. Yeah, we're coordinating the visit now.
A board
obviously
visit to the line before.
Well, we're coordinating the visit now, obviously, with the amount of testing that's going on and the schedule. You know, we're trying to fit it into that. So we are working very closely with MWA to arrange that.
Just following up on Mr. Downs' comment, I recall, I think the last board meeting, we voted to give a appreciable amount of federal money to COG to use in their job access and reverse commute program. And we might be talking with them about how some of it might be used to promote this service.
Thank you. Okay.
Yeah, I just want to, even though I'm not on the committee, when you guys go out, I would love to go since I'm a mile and a half from the Wheelie Avenue station. I walk by there all the time, so look forward to it.
Thank you.
I understand. I just want to make sure I don't miss it. Come on my house, as you said, for one.
We'll make a welcome committee if you want to do that. Okay. Ms. Vasak, I want to thank you because this has really been a very good presentation, and I think the discussion that you've heard really is the one that, and I wrote the regional part down, because we really are thinking that we're going to Tyson's, and most people stop and say Tyson's, and there's so much more beyond there. But more importantly, and using the lens that I see through, is that when I'm traveling here, I am passing those who are traveling there. And often you get a chance to hear folks. They are from Maryland. They are from the District of Columbia. They are from the Arlington, even. I think we really do have to think of it as actually the line that's really kind of bringing the region together for a change of that convenience, because it's the jobs. This is the recreational aspect. While you can take one seat to National, you can also take one seat back into practically Wolf Trap or other areas as you continue. So it is the opportunity to bring the region together economically and socially in a much better way that we've been before today. Those of us that are comfortable with the bus have been able to tread through this, but now it's an amazing difference that we want to have. And also to include, I think the other jurisdictions on that call would be very important. When we were on our call yesterday, Mr. Hines raised the point, you know, we need to talk about what's at the stations in Arlington. Because if you live in the District of Columbia and you've said, oh, yeah, that festival is there or that park is there, or you now say there is a convenient ride. Or the Adams Morgan Festival, you know, is right conveniently for those who would not say tread or don't want to take their car if that's their last choice.
Yeah, so can I just piggyback on that and mention that FYI, Ben's Chili Bowl is opening up in Arlington shortly. So come on out, folks. Come on out.
We heard it's going to be a great destination.
Just two last things around that. We talked about the retailers, and it is a crucial discussion. And the employers that are already there know where the folks are who are coming. That data is there. They know if their concentration of labor is coming from Woodbridge or if it's coming from Largo or if it's coming from Calvert County, wherever it's coming from, they know where that data set is. And I think that we really do need to exploit, in a healthy way, the interconnectivity of the region and how it works. There's a new hospital opening up at the tail end of the line, Silver Line in Largo that will be a major economic center. You mentioned FedEx Field that's there. There's a lot of opportunity to draw the region together. It's the Silver Line, but it's really the metro system. And we need to exploit the Silver Line, but it's really the expansion of the system. It's not the Silver Line that's being built. It's being built, but it's really the enhancement to the regional system that is occurring. And we're not just marketing it to the people that go along the Silver Line and who work there or who have get value, because the whole region gets the value. And we just need to make sure, and I know that you're doing that well, and you're asking for the feedback and the input, and we really do need to tap into that to draw those opportunities out.
I mean, just following up on that, we're not just marketing a new line. We're marketing a new and different region.
That's
the region is different because this part of it is now connected in with the rest of it and vice versa. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much. The next item on the agenda is the Title VI piece, and Ms. Burnside, Mr. Nguyen will be doing that. The Title VI piece is part of the responsibility of the board in terms of approving Title VI, and we will be looking at the requirements that we need to review, standards, policies, and definitions that will be called upon to approve at the next meeting. All right, Ms. Burnside, want to get started?
Good afternoon, Chair Hudgens, members of the committee, and members of the board. This afternoon, we're here with an information item for you, and this will not certainly be the first time we talk to you. In fact, I think we have four or five other presentations throughout the rest of the next year leading up to adoption of the Title VI program about a year from now. So this is the first opportunity to kind of talk to you about what's coming. And then there'll be a number of actions you'll be asked to take over the year. So as you may know, FTA has new Title VI requirements that came out in October of 2012. And these are applicable to fixed route bus and rail service. And they affect how we measure our bus and rail service for compliance with these new requirements. So the Title VI program's obviously been around for a long time. So what's new on these requirements? One new aspect is the establishment of FTA-mandated service standards and service policies, and I'm going to talk more about what those are. And you've all done some work on that already, so we're ahead of the game. And then another new requirement is for the board to establish Title VI definitions for major service changes that are applicable to Metro bus and rail service, and Jim's going to talk a little bit about that. He's from our Equal Opportunity Employee Relations Office. So, as I mentioned, the timeline is 1 year from now. So in September 2014, our next Title VI plan is due to the FTA, and that's good for 3 years. Okay, next slide. So some background on the Title VI program. As I said, Title VI is not new to Metro. And, in fact, we have a long and very successful history with Title VI. All of our plans in the past have been approved. And the FTA's even kind of looked at us as a best practice and directed other agencies to call us for guidance and information. And some examples from our Title VI analysis have been used in their training, the FTA's training, and in their circular. So that's very good news for us. And we're very pleased to say this because noncompliance with the provisions of Title VI has a pretty heavy penalty, basically suspension or termination of our federal financial assistance, and we certainly can't tolerate that. Okay. And as you know, Title VI of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 prohibits discrimination based on race, color, or national origin in programs or activities that receive federal financial assistance. And we, Metro, has to comply because we're a designated recipient of federal funds. Other local transit providers also are required to comply, like Ride-On, Dash, Connector. And so back at your own local governments, you should be hearing these same type of presentations over the next year. Okay, next slide. So what's new to Title VI? I alluded to some of them already, but they're all laid out here on this page. So FTA refers to these new requirements as service standards and service policies. And while they're new to the program, they're really nothing new to WMATA. As I said, the board's put a significant amount of effort over the past couple of years into adopting service standards, and those are now useful for this Title VI requirements and compliance monitoring. So I'm sure you remember in 2012 and 2013, you adopted rail service standards for peak and off-peak. And then prior to that, going back to about 2010, you established similar standards for bus. In recent meetings with FTA staff and some of the other local bus operators, it's clear that this work that you've done has positioned us pretty much in a leadership role in the industry, since we're already measuring our bus and rail service in conformity to these standards, and you hear about them in Vital Signs Report. And so I'm going to take you now through kind of what those are and how those link up to the new FTA requirements, how we sort of translate those. But before I do that, I just wanted to lay out, as I said, this is a year-long process, so what's the board's role going to be in all of this? So today's briefing, as I said, is informational to prepare you for the actions over the next year. Next month in October, Jim is going to be back to present an action item for the first step on the slide, which is to define what major service change, disparate impact, and disproportionate burden means. He's going to talk about those technical terms with you in a minute. There are three additional resolutions staff's going to be bringing to you over the next 9 months. So in March, it's going to be our monitoring plan. In May, the public participation plan. And then in June, the overall approval, so that we'll be ready to submit in September. So that's kind of the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5-step process. So now I'll move on to the next slide. So the first FTA standard, so there's four standards. The first standard is vehicle loading. And at WMATA, we refer to this as vehicle rail, on the rail side, rail passengers per car. And on bus, we refer it to load factor. So really, they're just different words to mean the same thing. And so you can see up on the slide, we've got kind of what the FTA definition is in the column to the left, then the equal sign, what it means here at WMATA, kind of our terminology. And then in the final two columns to the right, how we have set that standard and how we define it. And this is just a sample. The full definition is in the bias if you want to take a look at that. So the FTA circular has created standards or policies, as I said, that we can translate into our existing measures. And it's really just a terminology issue. So we can say that we are already doing some of this standard monitoring work. Okay, next slide. Okay, so the second of the four standards is vehicle headway. At WMATA, we refer to this as the wait time between buses and trains, or the frequency of bus and train arrivals. Again, just different words to mean the same thing. Next slide. The third standard, FTA standard, is on-time performance. Here at WMATA, rail on-time performance, as you know, is measured by how closely our trains stick to their scheduled headways, which is arrival frequencies or time between trains. And then on Metro Bus, on-time performance is measured by seeing how closely our buses stick to their published schedules. The fourth standard is service availability. And the simple explanation of this is measuring how walkable our service is. So how walkable? Walkable? So the, what, sorry, walkable, walkable. So staff has set the threshold, which measures a percentage of residents in our service area that are no more than a half a mile walk to a metro rail station or a quarter mile walk to a metro bus stop. So you can see in the chart on the bottom that if we do some analysis based on the U.S. Census American Community Survey information, 71% of our low-income residents live within a walkable distance to metro, as opposed to 50% of our non-low-income residents. So this shows that, as Jim's going to go into more of the technical definitions, the delivery of metro service doesn't place a disproportionate burden on our low-income population, just as an example. Okay, next is moving from standards now, thinking about what policies are. So the second element, as I said, is policies. And you can think of this as measuring what we have and where we have it. And we need to look for an equitable distribution of our transit amenities and the way that we assign our vehicles. So bus stops is an interesting example to consider. We have about just under 12,000 bus stops in the region, and those have to be equitably distributed to be in compliance with FTA requirements. And at many of those bus stops, there are shelters. And Metro owns 537 shelters. Most of those, about 350 of those, are physically at rail stations, and the remaining, just under 200, are dispersed amongst the 12,000 in the region. And we're only going to, under this Title VI requirement, be reporting on those that we own and control. And as you know, many of the shelters in the region are owned and controlled by the local jurisdictions, and so they will have the same requirements to look at equitable distribution in their own jurisdictions and submit that information to FTA. An upcoming action the board is going to be asked to take, as I mentioned, is approving the results of our monitoring program. We have to take each of these four service standards and two FTA service policies and measure whether or not we're providing service in a disparate or disproportionate way. And this action, as I said, is coming before you in March. Before that can happen, the board's going to be asked next month to approve a definition of disparate impact and disproportionate burden. Disparate refers to minority populations, and disproportionate refers to low income, as well as define what determines a major service change for both bus and rail. And Mr. Nguyen is going to walk you through that now. Jim?
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
As Andrea mentioned, this is a policy where the board has already completed some of the work, and that some time ago, the board approved a major service change policy for Metro bus service reductions. Regulations now require that the thresholds for major service change need to be applicable to increases and decreases in service. The policy also needs to be, first, low enough to capture impacts on riders, but high enough so that in-depth equity analysis is not required for minor service changes. And it must be usable until our Metro's 2017 Title VI program. The compact requires a public hearing for major service decreases, but does not require a public hearing for service increases. All fare changes require a public hearing. The compact requires a public hearing for major service decreases, but does not require a public hearing for service increases. The compact allows Metro to establish the thresholds for public hearings. They may differ from Title VI analysis purposes. However, staff is recommending that the policies coincide to have continuity internally and to prevent confusion. Let's first consider Metro Bus. As I just mentioned, the board has established thresholds for when Metro bus service reductions are considered major and thus require a public hearing and a board approval as well as service equity analysis. The proposed Metro bus major service change policy is basically what it was before. However, it now covers both service increases and decreases. The three parameters shown here affect the customer experience and includes the span the service operates, the frequency with which buses arrive, and the geographic area served. A major service change policy has not yet been established for Metro Rail. Staff felt that the rail parameters should mirror the bus parameters, although the definitions and the thresholds will differ from the modes. Next slide, please.
Can we let the presentation finish and then and come back to it? Okay. Yeah,
sure.
We can we'll pull, go back to the slide.
Now let's look at Metro Rail. The proposed policy for major service change for Metro Rail is shown on the next two slides. Again, the parameters match those proposed for Metro Bus and were selected because they affect the customer experience. Here we see the first two parameters, the span the service operates and the geographic area served. On the next slide, We will review the third parameter, the frequency with which trains arrive. The parameter for span says that if a change is made to what the board has approved as the span service to Metro Rail, it will be considered a major service change and would again require board approval. It would also be necessary to hold a public hearing and to complete a Title VI analysis. The second parameter affects coverage and availability of service, such as permanently closing a station for one or more days, or opening a new station, or creating a new line, or abandoning the line. The third parameter of the major service change for Metro Rail is frequency. The policy says that Metro, if Metro were to change the frequency from the current board-approved frequency parameter, it would be considered a major service change and subject to public hearing and a Title VI equity analysis. Next slide, please. The policies we are going to discuss come into play when there is a major service change or fare adjustment. The definitions established a threshold to determine what the adverse impact on minority and low-income population is disproportionate when compared to the impact of non-minority and low-income populations. The terms used in the regulations are disparate impact for minority populations and disproportionate burden for low-income populations. The regulations also say that the thresholds must be applied uniformly regardless of the mode and cannot be altered until Metro's 2017 Title VI program. The regulations require board approval of these definitions, as well as comment from the public on the proposed definitions. Next slide, please. Because the policy impacts how the agency will make transit decisions in the future, it is very important for Metro to invest time to create a policy definition that is, one, legally defensible, two, statistically valid, and three, has input from the public who will be affected by it. To that end, an interdepartmental working group has been evaluating several approaches to determine the threshold for disparate impact and for disproportionate burden. Also, we did not want to set the threshold too low to miss any disparate impacts. At the same time, we did not want to set it too high so as to never have any adverse impacts. Our system is very complex, given the size, multiple modes, multi-jurisdictional, and several local service providers. When we benchmarked our transit agency, we found that the approaches were all over the board. Some agencies simply chose a percentage difference between the impacts on minority populations versus the impact on non-minority populations. Our research shows that two systems have developed an approach using statistical methodologies. That's New York and TriMet. So please note that we have not been able to determine if the FTA has approved any of those definitions. With the exception of LA, and that was under a compliance mandate, most of the larger multimodal systems are still, like us, in the process of putting together their definitions. Whatever definition we determine is best to Metro, we want it to be simply to use and simple to understand. Next slide, please. Staff has been evaluating several approaches to determine this threshold. To finalize a policy definition, we must seek expert help, and we've done that from a statistician, and we have run scenarios with various approaches and thresholds. We are also taking into consideration the results of a public survey. The policy definition will be presented to the board in October. FTA regulations require a comment from the public on the proposed Title VI definitions for major service change, disparate impact, and disproportionate burden. Metro has collected this public input through focus groups and community organizations and an online survey on WMATA.com. In August, staff from the Office of Equal Opportunity and Employer Relations worked with community organizations across the region to convene focus groups to provide input on the proposed definitions. We met with around 100 customers and staff that represented diverse populations, including minorities, low-income persons, limited English proficient persons, veterans, individuals with disabilities, elderly individuals, and students. The focus groups were also a good opportunity to share information on Metro's current Title VI policies and language assistance resources. Metro had an online survey available from August 14th through the 30th. The survey was accompanied by a short introductory video, which was available in both English and Spanish. Metro promoted the online survey through a press release, the At WMATA Twitter feed, our extensive listserv, and the Planet Metro blog. The survey was also forwarded to the JCCs, the RACs, and the AACs with the request that they also take the survey and forward it to their colleagues and constituencies. Nearly 400 survey responses were received. The focus groups proved to be an important outreach method to collect input from minority, limited English proficient, and low-income populations. Many survey responses directly on WMATA.com came from Caucasian and higher income respondents. The majority of survey participants agreed with the proposed Title VI definitions for major service changes for Metro Bus and Metro Rail. Another highlight from the survey results was that respondents believed that even small differences between impacts on minority and low minority and non-minority riders was to be considered major. Staff will take this input into consideration when finalizing the disparate impact and disproportionate burden policies. Last slide. Metro's Title VI program update is due to FTA in September of 2014. In order to have everything ready by that date, we have developed the following schedule for board consideration. The board must approve the entire Title VI program update. The board, because the circular, it comes in 17 different types of requirements. We have decided to bring you the major items for your consideration and approval over the next 10 months. And this slide shows you the schedule for the next steps.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nguyen. Thank you very much. Mr. Nichols, you want to go back to your slide. You have some detailed information you wanted to ask.
It is, and this is an informational. First off, thank you for the presentation. Thank you both, appreciate it. I can see a lot of work has gone into it, and I'm not a member of this committee, so there perhaps has been a lot of other background and dialogue that I didn't have a chance to participate in, so forgive my questions.
This is new to us.
Okay. Well, here's what would be helpful for me is in if we're looking to approve a policy in October and you've shared what research you've been doing, I need to see more specific examples of exactly what the policy is and is not, what alternatives we considered and why, and what and why we chose what we did. Because it is, otherwise I have no context for saying do it. I really don't. I don't know what alternatives we considered and why we didn't go with those. Mm-hmm. Because of what outcomes may have happened. And it seems to me, and I'd like some feedback on this, that we operate the major transit system in the region. We've solicited feedback from our jurisdictions, but there's an interconnectedness between the transit systems that are run by the jurisdictions and what ours is. And it would seem that there would need to be standards that similarly apply throughout the region. We can only control what we control, but there should be a logic throughout the entire regional transit system. And talk to me about what happens when Montgomery County or Arlington or Prince George's or X has a different standard as it relates to impact. Now, they're evaluated individually, jurisdictionally, but shouldn't there be a logic to how impact occurs throughout the region so that folks can flow and jobs can flow and everyone can prosper?
And what you're saying is absolutely correct. And the irony of the circular is that it does not give you direction. It does not give you that kind of direction.
Right, but we have the opportunity to do it, though, without the direction.
Right, and what I'm saying is there really is no benchmark that has been set by the FTA. We're going to look at what is in the best interest for Metro. We're going to look at what makes good business sense. As I said earlier, we're going to have a process that is going to be legally defensible. But as far as the FTA really saying you should use percentages or you should use a modified percentage, they did not do that this time. They provided the circular and left it really up to each particular transit agency to develop their own. There is no benchmark.
Well, one of the things that I would like to be able to see is how our key stakeholders are addressing this issue. I do believe it's important for us to understand, and to the extent that there are substantive differences in how it impacts our stakeholders, I'd like to understand what that is, unless you can tell me that it's irrelevant and it's not important to our customers. And maybe it's not, but I'd like to understand why it's not.
Well, one thing is, you get federal funding triggers a lot of this.
I understand that, but I understand the funding. I understand the fact that we have an obligation to operate what we operate. But I would like to understand how this interconnected system addresses a federal requirement that impacts all of our customers. I might get on the system in one jurisdiction and ride to another. I just want to know how it impacts us and how the different jurisdictions are treating it. I'd like to understand that.
Well, I think that, it's just my comment, Mr. Nguyen, our task here is to approve the Metro plan.
Correct.
That is what FTA will judge us on.
Correct.
And I will take the simple example, the public hearing that we're going out to have next week, the public hearings that we will be judged on the decisions we make about those bus changes according to the current guidelines.
That's right.
So these changes are changes that now have maybe a broader latitude that we must define some some more granular definitions as to how we do it next plan.
Correct.
That's where we are.
Correct.
The question we might want to ask and have information on is what do our jurisdictions do, but are you asking that we want to include that as part of
No, I'm not. I'm not asking that. But for me, this is more than just a check the box exercise.
Oh, it's.
I think we're obligated to understand how the system functions across the board. We don't control what other jurisdictions do. We have the obligation to respond to what we do. But I'd like to understand how Montgomery County treats this issue, and how the state of Maryland treats this issue. If you tell me that it's irrelevant, then fine, but tell me why it's irrelevant, and I'll move on. I don't want to ask esoteric, asinine questions. I just do want to understand what we're doing, and perhaps giving me the examples of exactly how the alternatives for approaching it may help me to understand if my questions are not going to be a big factor in our decisions, but I do want a better context for the decisions.
I think we got to look at what we're about here. We're trying to address the Title VI requirements. From what I understand from our staff, is much more complex than it's been in the past. And from what I also understand, it was said earlier, nobody else has done this. So we're, and you, as is usual, we're probably going to be setting the example. And you have all these other jurisdictions which have their timelines in which they're going to do it. I think that we have to focus on the task at hand. And then certainly as the other jurisdictions come along, we can take that information and provide it. But if we want to make this timeline an already difficult situation, it's new. I mean, it's not that we can't do it, but there's a lot of thought and discussion that has to go into it. I think we should focus on what's at hand. And as the other jurisdictions come on board and do what they do, and they may be looking to us, then we can present that.
And I'm not uncomfortable with leading the way, but I want to understand completely what we are deciding and what choices and what drove our decisions in one direction or another. I understand, Richard,
that's
and I'm
fair
not,
enough.
And I'm not, but I just
I'm
I want to be
with that.
I want to completely understand what we're doing and why.
Yeah, but I'm absolutely with that. You should have a full understanding of what we went through, what we did, what we heard, what we looked at. My concern is involving the other jurisdictions in it.
No, all I'm asking in with respect to the other jurisdictions is, what are their approaches? I mean, we cannot manage their process, and I don't. Lord knows we've got enough on our plates. I understand that, but I just don't want to. I want to make sure that we're not in a silo, and I want to completely understand what choices we made and why we made those choices for the standards that we're setting. Because, as you said, we're locked into the next 3 years, and I want. And it's new. I understand that, but I want to understand it completely in that decisioning process.
And I totally agree with what Rich has said. For our purposes, we will have explanation as to why we came to the decision that we came to. We will not have, shall I say, an explanation as to why its jurisdiction came to their decision. There are jurisdictions that are, in fact, have already come to us and asked us about Title VI. But we have no way, and we do not influence how they do what they do, nor will we really know how they do what they do.
Thank you.
Mr. Dow.
Just following up on that, and this in part is a well-intentioned effort to set good equity standards. It's not minimum standards. This is not what we have to offer. This is assuring that what is offered is equitable. And I, from a service standpoint, yes, where our system connects to another, from the customer standpoint, that is important. But I would be concerned in that this is a mandated compliance effort. And unlike some other regions, we are able to break this into the pieces. Other recipients are not sub-recipients for whom we are obligated to have plans. They have to have their own. My guess is if we go around today and ask the others, what are you doing, the answer will be, I don't know. And they're feeling their way as well. But I don't want to let something stand in the way of our meeting our obligation. One question, are we not required to have any Title VI standards vis-a-vis Metro Access?
Well, Metro Access is part of our overall.
But there's none of the things that were in the presentation today did relate to Metro Access service. So I just want to be sure we've covered that base.
Mr. Bolter and then Mr.
Chairman. It came to my attention that we're hiring outside consultants to help us figure this out. Is that the case? And if that's true, how much are we going to be spending for outside consultants on this Title VI initiative, and why can't we do this? If it's true, why can't we do this in-house?
Yeah, what I stated was we're looking at a statistician to give us some input on determining adverse impact. And it's for ideas. As we said, this is new ground we're treading on. We want to ensure that we're doing the very best thing for this agency. And if there is some input out there, there's some knowledge out there that we don't have, then I think I'd be remiss if I didn't at least seek it. It will be part of the consideration that we use when we finally come to what we're going to take back to this board to say this is the definition.
Could you give me an example of what we're going to use outside consultants for, statistical analysis or thinking outside the box? Or I mean, what, and did FDA have outside consultants when they did this circular that we could ask to come before us to tell staff
Well, I tell you what.
What direction we should go in?
Let me just give you an example here. When we did some benchmarking, CTA, SEPTA, BART, LA Metro, New York, SamTrans, SMFA, San Francisco, Denver, TriMet, Orange County, and Sacramento all have different processes. So we're trying to get what might be best practices. We don't know what best practices is yet.
You're not answering what I'm asking. What are we going to use outside consultants to do? Is some of it for public, bolster our public participation initiatives? Because I think we've got enough in-house capabilities for public participation. So I would rule that out. What are we going to use the consultants for?
What we're asking them to do is to share with us, from their knowledge, what is the best methodology to determine adverse impact. That's what we're asking.
So is this lawyers or statisticians?
Statisticians, as it stated.
It's a statistical consultancy activity.
And I assume those would be the expert witnesses we will need when we're taken to court over the standards.
Well, I tell you what,
the legally defensible pieces.
Mr. Downey, we've been doing this now for about 5 or 6 years since I've been here. The process that we've used before, we've never been challenged on. The FDA said it was the best that they've seen. And correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
So always possible. Yeah.
If I understand correctly how the process will unfold, the other box that this builds for us is the parameter around which public hearings will or will not be held when we change service.
Correct.
The examples that you bring to us, I'd like to know specifically what types of changes would trigger a public hearing, which ones would not, how that process will happen, and I don't want to be 2 years from now wanting to do a process around a change and realize that we created a definition that harms our customers, in fact, or constrains our ability to respond to service because of how we made a decision. We may find ourselves that way, but I want to know clearly why we made the decision. Mm-hmm. Things change.
Sure.
But please understand that you've been researching this for 5 years. I'm seeing it for the first time today. You're asking me next month to approve a policy that will box us in for the next several years or enable opportunities for the next several years. I just want to know exactly what we approve and why and what were our choices, and I want to know what direction our jurisdictional partners are going. We're not going to manage them. I just like to know what they're doing. If they're asking us for help, fine. I'd just like to know.
No, my point is that we may not know what they're doing.
Okay, and that's fine.
And because they're maybe following us.
That's fine. I'd just like to know that. That's fine. But I think that survey is not an unreasonable survey to know what they're doing. We've been talking with them, so we would surely know what they're doing or not. And if they're waiting for us, that's a good sign, too. But I'd like to know.
Mr. Nguyen, let me understand. Today we are complying with FTA.
Correct.
And on the example of bus service, we're very clear what our criteria and what the triggers are for
Correct.
All of those. So we're now taking the changes that we've made about our services and we've compared them to this new regulation and the definitions, and we are now getting ready to write according to that now.
Yes.
I think when I said granular, I meant it would be a much more stringent maybe guideline, but we have written those guidelines, and I'm looking at the civil rights office in the corner here. So I think your question is the right question, but I think Mr. Nguyen is saying that's the hat that he's wearing today.
Correct.
That he knows that we need, one, the information of guidance for policy, and that's the consultant piece. And that is the mode that we will be in approving this, because that is the mode that we operated in before.
Yes, it will be the combination of the consultant plus an interdepartmental team we have here
right.
to determine what particular becomes the kicker for adverse impact. And you will have all of the rationale that we do for that. Now, the piece regarding the other jurisdictions, I probably will not have that.
Well, speaking for the other jurisdictions, I think, as Mr. Sarles has said, I think more people are looking to us than we are to guide you.
All the more reason why I want to know exactly what I'm voting on when I vote on it, because if somebody else follows our lead, then I want to know that. And I know that they'll know what they're doing. I want to know that I know what I'm doing when I vote on it. I want to know why I did it, and I know what the I want to know what the impact will be, and I want to know what the options were.
I think it's good data. Okay, Mr. Bolter, and is there? I'm sorry, Mr. Downs was the next person, and we're going to bring our discussion to a conclusion. This will be back to us for an action the next.
For a variety of reasons, we have not held public hearings about rail, for a variety of reasons. The way I read this,
we could.
Rail will now be subject to a more rigorous standard about public hearing processes, about schedule changes. The trigger for that is going to be very important to both preserve the flexibility of management on one hand to adjust to loads over time, and to be able to do that by line or even by segment or by turnbacks, without having an endless series of public hearings that would both wear the public out and slow down a decision-making process. So
that's correct.
I'm comfortable with where we have been about the detail and integrity of our public hearings process about bus changes. We've been pretty rigorous about that. This is new for us, potentially, about the impact on rail. And I want to make sure that we stay focused on that. And I know that the general manager will help us stay focused on that.
That's right.
Understood.
Okay. All right.
Well, I was just going to say the same thing, Madam Chair, on the rail side that Tom mentioned. But for example, would we have to do a Title VI for Phase 2 of the Silver Line?
Yeah.
Because it's going to fit this envelope, right?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
But if you were changing a schedule on rail by 20 seconds, would you have to have a public hearing?
I'm with you. I'm with Alvin, too, about what we're getting into here.
Well, we don't have any choice.
I understand the choice, but we need to know.
All righty. I think we've had a full discussion. And I want to move on now to the third item, and that is the vital signs report. Thank you very much, Andrea and Mr. Wynn.
Can I get to stay at the table?
You get a chance to stay.
Okay. Here today to summarize the second quarter of 2013 calendar year performance outcomes. So that's March, April, and May. April, May, and June. And discuss the key results and also talk about our new customer satisfaction measure. You've already had a little bit of discussion about that today. Okay, next slide. In terms of the key highlights from the quarter, we have 8 measures out of 10 that have improved. I'm going to talk a little bit about how we've continued our performance-based decision process. The summer's over now, but actually the time period we were reporting on, we were preparing for the summer, and it actually got really hot at the last month of this quarter I'm reporting on. And then we did have some safety and security challenges that we confronted during the quarter. Next slide. Okay, this is the red light, green light, and just to kind of highlight some of the results here, and I'm going to talk some more about these. Mentioned earlier that rail on-time performance is almost at 92% in the quarter as compared to 90.5 last year at the same time. I think one of the real success stories is the rail fleet reliability. We've talked about that a little before, but in this quarter it was 63,000 miles between delays, the distance between delays as compared to a year ago when we were looking at 38,000, so that's a huge increase. Not quite doubling, but getting close to doubling the performance on of our rail fleet. Escalator, there was some media on that our escalators are in service and available for riders in an improved rate that over the last 5 years. 9 out of every 10 of the system's escalators are working, running during operating hours. and that is a significant improvement over the last time period. On the red light for elevator availability, we've had a significant but planned rise in our outages for scheduled modernizations, and the impact of this work has been offset by a notable decline in unscheduled outages. So it's kind of this idea about getting it right the first time. We've got 20% fewer out-of-service hours than last year. Just to talk about modernizations, that represents about 75% of the time that the elevators are out of service. So last year we were doing about 4 of those, and now we're doing 10. So that accounts for this red light on that measure. And then on the crime rate, we'll talk about that a little bit, but while our serious crimes are up 21% compared to the same time last year, that is offset by a pretty low parking crime rate. It's 27% lower than last year, and our bus crime is low, so that's why that gets a yellow light. Next slide. So on the theme of continuing our performance-based decisions, you can see the picture up on the upper left there of our bus on-time performance center. Our bus on-time performance has improved slightly compared to last year, same time, and that's a result of some service improvements that have been funded and implemented. And this on-time performance center, which monitors and makes adjustments in real time as needed during the day as related to service delays and scheduled incidents. The weekday rail on-time performance, as I mentioned, is above target and was 1% above the same time last year. And performance is better on all 5 lines as our fleet reliability stayed high. And we implemented a number of successful strategies. One of the things that we've been using a lot more is a tool that helps us monitor the movement of trains. So anytime during the day, there's trains throughout the system and in different yards. And in order to balance deployment of trains, we need to know where those trains are and to be able to kind of put them together. And so that's really helped us with that tool to have a view into where all the trains are. As I said, escalator availability is 3% above target, focusing on getting it right the first time. And this has remained better than target for the 8th consecutive month. One of the really important sub-measures is preventive maintenance compliance. It's up to 97%. 2 years ago, it was 40%. So I think that tells a big story. Next slide. We prepared for summer weather. It actually started to get hot in June, which is in this time period. Bus maintenance worked really closely with our procurement group to make sure that we had all the AC refrigerants and other AC components to prevent some of the shortages that we've had in past years, and continue to monitor the automated vehicle monitoring to see if there's any bus with high coolant temperatures and we could take preventive action to fix those. Car maintenance conducted a fleet-wide HVAC readiness campaign to ensure that the systems were ready for the hot summer and ensure a comfortable ride for customers. And by using historical failure data, car maintenance focused its efforts on completing a comprehensive HVAC overhaul program for the 5000 series cars, which has had some problems. We also took advantage of the summer weather to do some elevator floor maintenance, and we tried to schedule those repairs to coincide with some of the planned station shutdowns to minimize the customer impact. So you should see some new elevator floors around the system. I mentioned we had some safety challenges that we confronted, and our customer and injury rates, while during the quarter, you saw the green light on that, during the quarter were better than last year. They have been worse than target, and if you look at the year to date, the numbers are not favorable compared to last year. They did start to reverse in May, so that's that resulted in a green light for the quarter. We've been trying to address these customer injury rate trends by releasing impactful public safety messages, and you've all seen this probably cutout figure. Holding the doors open could cost you an arm and a leg. A very common type of injury is people running in the stations and falling on the escalator. So these campaigns are designed around the common type of injuries that we're seeing for customers. In our workplaces, you can see, just trying to look at this train on the left side having a collision with a piece of equipment, just trying to delineate the dynamic envelope and make sure that we're addressing some of the safety concerns that happen in the workplace. rolling out incident investigations and doing root cause analysis. Security challenges, next slide. As I mentioned, our serious crime was up 21% compared to last year, and that's due to an uptick in crime on the rail system, primarily in May and June. And that's driven by thefts of electronic devices and bicycles. And so MTPD has shifted officers to platforms and trains in some of the affected stations and decreased officer patrol areas so they can have quicker response times. They've also launched a bicycle registration program and held multiple ULOC giveaways to give people better secure bike locks. And I think it's important to put the uptick in crime in context. So if you compare January to June of 2013, year to date versus 2012, there's only been 7 additional crimes, again, because some of these crimes in the rail system are offset by parking lot crimes being very low and bus crime being low. And then finally, as you know, we have a new customer satisfaction measure. In past vital signs, we talked about customer commendations and customer complaints. Those are kind of reactionary to anything that's happening in a given moment. So the customer satisfaction is more of a long-term measure and much more in-depth. So we launched our Voice of the Customer, a new phone survey that gives us consistent feedback from riders. And over the course of the year, we contact approximately 1,200 bus and 1,200 rail customers and ask them about their ride in the last 30 days. Was it reliable? Was it safe? And what were some of the environmental conditions? The good news is that the results show that the riders regard what we do favorably, and 80% of bus and rail customers rate Metro as good or excellent. In fact, on the rail side, customer satisfaction steadily increased because we've had better weekday on-time performance related to our other measure, and improved cleanliness. And our station managers are benefiting from the better customer service training. On the bus side, you've heard about the CARE, Customers Are the Reason We Exist, training program. That's starting to have payoffs, as we've talked about before. We've got more reliable buses, more on-time buses. So all that results in a positive customer satisfaction result. And that is my presentation on vital signs. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any questions, please?
Just a comment. I think this is a lot of good news that's here. I was really pleased when you brought attention to the escalator numbers. But I look in the vital signs report, in virtually every case, there is some nugget of information that we definitely want to put forward. There's, you know, 1% is small, but it is in the right direction. I think virtually every case, there's things that are going in the right direction, and we have to make that known to the public. That's part of the payoff for a lot of pain that's happening as the system is working on, but it is moving in the right direction. We need to let people know.
You mean we're getting momentum?
Any more questions? Go ahead.
Thank you very much.
Sure. Just, we talked this morning a bit about the Metro Access. And the customer service fell, satisfaction was lower on that, and it was kind of contrary to some of the other data. Can you talk a little bit about what's behind the customer satisfaction for riders and on Metro Access and the dip there?
Probably question is.
Well, he talked a bit about it this morning. Just from your perspective, what were your thoughts on it?
Well, I think you were here when Mr. Ken addressed some of the differences between this measure, customer satisfaction, and the complaints measure.
So you,
I think it would be better if Christian addressed it.
Okay.
Probably he'd be better to address this one.
Okay. The only other question I had right actually at the moment was just with respect to the escalators, which is great. Is our escalator measure by availability by the number of escalators, or is it, do we weight it based on the number of passengers that are using a given escalator? Some escalators have a lot more traffic than others, and do we weight our availability based on how available escalator service is to the to our users?
It's a measure of the number of hours that they're available.
Is it feasible to weight the availability against the number of people who use a given escalator?
It's hard to tell.
Is it?
That which escalator, actually, that you can't.
We know the numbers for each station.
Right, but that's not the same as each escalator and which mezzanine. I will say that when the escalator and elevator folks maintain and look at responsiveness and positioning people, they do take into account which stations are very heavily using escalators, you know, just heavily used escalators versus more lightly used escalators. So they do take that into account. Right, Rob? As they look at their maintenance and responsiveness rates.
Yeah, and that's really where the core of my question is. An escalator that's down, that is lightly used, has one impact. An escalator that's down, and obviously we know that, but if we had a general sense or some sense of that availability in that context, I think it would be a little more illuminative.
It also takes, I don't know what we would do to try to develop that measure, to tell you the truth. Because it's individual escalators, and then you have to know the flow on those escalators versus downtime. What we try to do in these, you know, key performance indicators at the board level is to give you a general indication: are we doing better or are we doing worse?
Right.
At, you know, much more down on the weeds, down closer to the folks, there are other performance measures that the supervisors use and everything else to try to keep on top of the fact that what they do adds up to a grosser key performance indicator, keeps us moving in the right direction. I can't tell you each escalator, their availability, but I can tell you that if you look at the data over time, you've seen an improved indicator. So that you know that the system as a whole is improving. And that's the purpose of these key performance indicators at this high level. Same thing with on-time performance, you know, of the rail system. That's a high-level indicator. There's a lot of things going on to make that happen. We mentioned the mean distance between failures on equipment. And there's even below that, it's the failures on doors and that sort of thing. That's all being looked at by our supervision down there, but it all grosses up to these key indicators that you judge me on and you judge the organization on.
And I realize that, and I appreciate that, and I know that we're making a big improvement. So that I'm clearly cognizant of. Just trying to think through ways to connect our customer and their experience closer with the improvement that we are making. I mean, 80% of the, or 95% of the elevators, of escalators working, still might 20% of the population still may not have an escalator. And I'm just throwing out a number, for example. I'm trying to get a sense of that. And if you're telling me that's too granular to be able to get to, I hear you, but that connects more with what the customer experience is than our mechanical knowing, which is important because that's what drives the customer.
And I'd just like to support Alvin's point. I mean, if an elevator or an escalator is out at Metro Center, that's clearly a different issue than if an escalator is out some much more lightly used station. And you all have done an excellent job of coming up with a very creative way to measure things. And I'm sure it must be doable. We know who is going into stations, and if an escalator is one of three that goes from level X to level Y of a station, you know, you look at the total number of people moving through that station and divide it by three. I mean, I think there is a way to do it, and what I think it gives you is that not all escalators are equally important to our customers. The ones in the most busy stations are clearly more vital to people's ability to get around than the ones in the less used stations. And there ought to be a way to take that into consideration.
That's taken into consideration by the maintenance people and the maintenance supervisors when they look at how to station people, where they do more preventive maintenance. That's what they do.
But we would like to know that, I think, is what I'm assuming Mr. Nichols is saying.
Okay. Any other questions? Hearing none, we are adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Andrew.